A frank talk. The top politician who doesn't intend to be Prime Minister isn't a top politician. The Master, while still young. David Petrie had not particularly wanted to travel with Caroline Phillips, but now he was pleased that he had. The first-class cabin of the Airbus was virtually empty, and the minute he had put aside his paperwork with a theatrical groan, so had she. How could he exorcise the memory of that earlier ill-starred flight to Italy with Ella? He turned to Currow with a broken smile, at his most gallant.
"Well, my fair enemy, can I tempt you to a glass of champagne and a little light conversation?"
"Thanks for the fare. And yes, you can. And if we can't talk across an empty first-class seat, where can we talk? So my turn first. You've been against me from our first hours in Parliament. Why was that?"
"Because I'm in this game to get to the top, to play as well as I can. And everyone told me that of all my colleagues, you were the one who was better than me, the one who could stop me. Come on, Home Secretary, maybe a very nice woman, but you're a politician and you know how it is."
Petrie, who had rejected champagne in favour of a brandy and soda, drained his glass and fell silent. He twisted in his seat so he was looking directly at Caroline. Most people who did this, close up, flinched, not from her beauty, but from her questioning candour. Those clear blue eyes, those acrobatic eyebrows. But Davy just stared back at her, intent, comfortable.
"But you know what, Mistress Phillips? You can have it. You can have the whole damned lot. Okay, so I'm here for the same reason you're here. The Master wants us here, eh? He wants us to meet the Vice President. So what do we deduce from that, Home Secretary? I tell you what, we deduce that this is big potatoes, top tomatoes. It means the President himself's involved. He knows our names. He's interested in whatever challenge, whatever deal awaits us over there. How did that happen? Do you know? I don't. My guess is three reasons. The Master, the Master, the Master. Many questions, only one answer. But for me, at any rate, I've just realised, it's all becoming a joke. For me, it's too late."
Caroline replied, "I wonder, Mr. P, if perhaps you're just a little bit drunk. You seem unusually passionate. Not like you.
I imagine we've been sent for some kind of test, some test of loyalty or of ruthlessness, and I assume that, as so often before, we're meant to compete with one another. But you understand all of that, Mr. Petrie? If you didn't, you wouldn't have said that I can have it. That's very kind of you, but I'm not sure I want it either. I'm here because I'm interested. I just want to know what happens next."
Petrie smiled again. He leaned forward and touched Carol on the arm. He'd never been less drunk in his life.
"I want to know what happens next, too. Perhaps we can work together after all."
"The Master wouldn't like it."
"No, he wouldn't."
"Interesting thought, though." And she turned back to the thick pile of human incompetence and misery she'd been given to deal with. As the plane banked into its final descent to Leonardo da Vinci Airport, Caro twisted towards Davy and asked him, "What do you mean when you say it's too late for you? You're as ruthless a politician as I've ever known. You don't just shrug and give up."
"I'm surrendering. My hands are up. Look."
"The thing is, Caroline, I'm guilty of a failure of love." Of all the answers she had expected, this was one that hadn't passed through her mind at all. She didn't even know what it meant. Instead, she asked, "David Petrie, what's your Achilles heel?
What's your fatal flaw?
She leaned forward. We all have one. Everybody in politics has one thing hidden inside them which one day will bring them down. What's yours?
The game. I don't love the game enough. I don't love it beyond everything else.
That I've seen before. Alan Johnson, Alistair Darling. Personally, Petrie, I think you're being too kind to yourself. I think your flaw is a lot more common than that.
He smiled and raised his eyebrows.
I think your flaw is that you're led by your cock. You're a pretty man, but you're a simple one too.
Davy was annoyed. I'd say that's a simplistic woman's explanation. I might even use the lesbian word. But since we're talking frankly, what about you? What's your secret weakness?
My charisma. My charm. Almost everybody falls for me. It's all they see. But what they don't see is that I don't care.
Care for what? The game?
Oh, no, the game is interesting. It keeps us going. No, I mean I don't care about anybody else. Not really. I can fake it so bloody easily, but I find almost everybody intolerably boring.
Davy nodded. The plane trip had been well worth it. I think what you mean, Caroline Phillips, is that you are a psychopath. Just what we need in a prime minister.
The black-suited man waiting for them in the arrivals hall held a placard reading HM Government Ministers. Two Carabinieri motorcyclists were revving their engines just in front of their limousine. Once they were settled inside, the driver handed Davy an envelope.
Open, please. It is for both of you.
Inside it was a brief, handwritten note from the master himself. It instructed them, after they'd checked in, to make their way to the Niccolò Machiavelli private dining room where some gentlemen will be waiting for you. Please be with us no later than 8:30 p.m.
Mysterious, said Caro.
Peremptory, said Davy.
Should we? Said Caro.
We have to, said Davy.
Do we? Said Caro.
He'll be furious, said Davy.
And? Said Caro.
Fair point, said Davy, and tapped the driver on the shoulder. Piazza da Santa Cecilia Trastevere, he said. Roma Sparita.
Not hotel?
Asked the driver. Not hotel, said Davy.
The sudden detour was worth it, if only to watch the motorcycle escort heading off in the wrong direction of the hotel, then circling round and chasing them, followed by a bellowed conversation through the window of the car as the bikes and the Mercedes sped along the bank of the Tiber.
Red?
Bianco.
The melon?
Bruschetta.
The fettuccine with truffles is famous.
The ravioli.
Are you being deliberately perverse?
No, just honest. Food is too important to play games about.
Well, at last we agree on something.
Can I suggest, Mr. Petrie...
Davy.
Can I suggest, David, that we agree about something else? Tonight, we turn our phones off. The master and his friends will ruin our evening if we let them.
You're bolder than I expected, I admit it.
But at that moment, Caro, whose eyes had been flickering towards her mobile, which was shouldering itself around uneasily on the table and making tiny mouse-like noises, seized it and stabbed it into life. I'm sorry, David, but it's my partner, Angela. Two missed calls, and half a dozen from the master. And texts. Something's happening. Just give me one second. Caro's side of the conversation consisted mainly of gasps, moans, and oh-my-gods. Davy pulled faces intended to express concern and interrogation. Caro waved him away. She smiled. At some level, she didn't mean the expressions of shock. Still, by the time the call had ended, she had changed colour. Her lively tanned pink had faded to old candle wax and was heading towards grey. "Angela's had the most terrible accident. She's killed someone. On the road. An accident. Obviously. An accident. But she'd been drinking. Obviously. Oh, my God, what a terrible bore. I'm going to have to go home this minute." Davy found himself voicing thoughts, clear, fast, direct, that later made him wonder if he'd been a better pupil of the master's than he'd realized.
"You can't possibly stand by her, Caroline. You can't go home. You're the Home Secretary. Drink driving has become one of those things that are simply indefensible. If you go back now, you'll destroy everything you've worked for. The most sensible thing you can do is to give a bland statement, let the law take its course, and do your best to look after the kids."
"Look after the kids?"
"Well, Angela's going to go to jail, of course.
How can we have a Home Secretary who stands by a partner who's in jail for killing someone because she was pissed?
For Christ's sake, Caroline, get a grip. You can be kind to her in private. I expect you'll need to get some kind of live-in help for the children, but you can do your bit too. What you can't do is rush back and stand by your woman. That's just common sense."
"Is it? It feels like treachery to me. In the plane earlier, you said you couldn't carry on because you're guilty of a failure of love, that the game isn't worth it. I said I didn't care enough. Maybe we were both mistaken. At any rate, duty calls, and for once it calls me back."
"All right. But promise me this at least. Send her a message. Tell her you love her, whatever. But stay here in Rome tonight. Eat with me. At least think this through. And for Christ's sake, Caro, stand by me while we deal with those bloody Americans."
Caroline said nothing, but she picked up a piece of bruschetta and bit into it. She felt very hungry indeed. Meanwhile, the bloody Americans were bloody angry. The Niccolò Machiavelli dining room was on the fifth floor of the hotel. It seemed that the Florentine philosopher had a taste for fuchsia velour and modish photographs of urban decay in Detroit and Chicago. Cy Cantor had consumed two peach Bellinis. Buzz Boyd, who didn't drink, had downed about a gallon of Coke Zero and was belching with irritation. Neither man was used to being kept waiting, and the master, still pink and smelling of pine shower gel after his session in the gym, was finding it hard to calm them down. Two British ministers were now nearly an hour late, and the police reported that they had told their driver to take them to Trastevere, where they had left him. Neither was answering his texts, an unheard-of rudeness.
"Guys, guys! Look, I think I know what's happened. About an hour ago, I got a message telling me that the Home Secretary's partner... You know, guys, she's not one for the guys.
I'm sure your guys have told you that.
Well, she's been arrested in a fatal drink-driving case. Terrible for Caro Phillips. She'll have to cut her loose. But, guys, this gives us something to hold over her. It'll make her more malleable. Not that she isn't..."
Buzz walked over, invaded the master's personal space as if he were General Patton crossing the Rhine, and placed his broad, faintly pimpled nose right up against the master's.
"Well, it seems that she's not malleable enough to turn up for dinner. Where are those crazies?"
"Clearly she's going through some kind of personal crisis. Come on, guys, we've all been there. It's part of life. My guess is that David Petrie, you remember the one who's backed America time and time again, has taken her off to talk some sense into her. My suggestion, guys, is that we give them a bit of time to sort themselves out. They'll be here just as soon as they can be. Meanwhile, there's a lot we can talk about in private. Let's not waste the time.
Grumpily, the two Americans sat down at the table. As they were being served, the concierge arrived and whispered in the vice president's ear. Cy flushed.
No, sir. I most certainly did not order a gladiator.
It was probably that faggy Brit.
He waved his fork at the master.
Normally, he would have gestured at Buzz. It would have made a much funnier story. But he was too angry.
The master, however, had a great talent for ignoring the inconvenient and the unpleasant.
Guys, let's talk about the BBC. I mean, have you heard them on Israel? They're completely bloody unreconstructed. I was talking to Lachlan...
Really? Broke in Buzz, suddenly interested. I thought you and he... you know...
The master didn't even blush.
Oh, no, that was long ago. Ridiculous. And completely forgotten. No, Lachlan was saying...
And so the meal continued. Meanwhile, in Trastevere, another meal had ended. Davy had always been told that Caro was charismatic, that she had an irresistible appeal, something to do with candour, something to do with beauty and perhaps vulnerability too. Even she had told him she was irresistible. But until that evening, he had never really felt it himself. Over the food and the guarded conversation, neither fully trusted the other, not yet. He felt himself melt until she possessed him. Led by his cock, indeed. Caroline, meanwhile, was surprised by how unconcerned she felt about Angela's awful situation. It was something she understood but no longer really felt. This Rome was a place of velvet and diamonds, whose very night air was scented with wonderful possibilities. She noted that Petrie was doting on her with the little boy's appeal for recognition, and this warmed and amused her. Yes, yes. Led by his cock. And what happened next is their business, not ours. In the gallery.
God, the Italians really are impossible.